This is the 12 Songs of Christmas with Tav Falco of Panther Burns. My name is Alex Rawls, and this is my podcast about Christmas music. Today, I'm talking to Tav Falco of Panther Burns about A Tav Falco Christmas, his Christmas album from 2017. The album came as a bit of a surprise because, at their best, Panther Burns recordings have tested the musical tissue that holds songs together. The most extreme version of that came on Behind the Magnolia Curtain, his 1982 album produced by fellow Memphis resident Alex Chilton. On the album, Tav stress-test rockabilly, folk, and country blues with, shall we say, personal approaches to time and talent, and made his masterpiece in the process. His music since has never been so out, but it's never become conventional either. When people thought they knew what he was about, Tav added his fascination with tangos to his repertoire. A Tav Falco Christmas came as a curveball because it is seemingly straightforward. Instead of unearthing lesser-known Christmas songs that inevitably raise a lot of questions, his song choices are all familiar ones, performed more or less straight. Tav explains why during our recent interview. I could preview the interview, but I think it's best to let it and Tav speak for themselves. Here, then, is my talk with Tav Falco.
Dance music is a celebration of the body and a celebration, too, of the mind. It's a sensual expression. And there's no reason to separate that. We want to celebrate both. And music itself is a emotional undertaking. You look at Christmas music, well, it has a certain sentiment attached to it. And you go to music. You go to Christmas music at that time of year when it's a religious calendar event, and it is a time of celebrating the birth of the Christian deity and a time of rebirth. And we've composed a lot of songs around that, from hymns to popular music, some from other countries. We even sing like Heilige Nacht, Ruhige Nacht, the Silent Night, Holy Night, Silent Night from composed in Austria. There's beautiful, wistful music surrounding this. Of course, you don't think primarily that Christmas music is dance music, but you can dance to it, and you can slow dance to it. And then, of course, on our Christmas record, we draw from the canon of rock and roll Christmas songs. And we also do some songs on the album that are not rock and roll Christmas music. What I did in approaching this record was, again, looking at Christmas music from different genres of music. So I did the pop song that everyone sings, White Christmas, that has outsold all the records of the world. I think White Christmas is sold more as a single song than any other.
I think that's right.
And, I had to work to get on top of that song. It's just, all those Christmas songs were demanding. And we all worked like crazy in the heat of July at Sam Phillips Recording Service in Memphis to breathe life into these Christmas songs, these wintry Christmas songs. I was working with Mike Watt on bass, Toby Dammit on drums, and Francesco Daniolo from Rome on keyboard, and Mario Monterosso, the producer and lead guitarist from Rome. And so I picked songs in large part that I grew up with, the classics, as a child in Arkansas.
Our call got dropped.
Yeah. Yeah, we just got pulled over by the state police here in Missouri.
Ah. Oh, okay.
Running 95 miles an hour.
Oh, do you need to get off then? Do I need to let you go?
No. The Mario is back in the police car now.
Oh, great.
So we can continue talking.
So,
we bring this... any way to bring that window up? Yeah, it'd be so noisy if we do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, how did you think about or wonder or have thoughts about how your audience would react to a Christmas album?
Well, I knew that a Christmas album is always seems to be well received. I thought perhaps our audience might be surprised that we would undertake a Christmas record. But I wasn't too concerned about our audience. I wanted to do the record because I wanted to do it. And I'd always had this, idea for quite some time, and was able to interest our label, Org Music, in Los Angeles to go ahead and do the record. So once I got that approval, we launched into arranging the recording.
Okay.
And I think Christmas records do pretty well for most artists, but that wasn't the reason I did it. I mean, look at James Brown, all the Christmas records he did, all the Christmas songs he recorded, for example, James Brown. I mean, I'm not sure if he did that just for fun.
Sure.
Totally. Or whether he knew that those records were going to be really good sellers for him, maybe both. So to answer that question, it wasn't a marketing decision.
Right.
Far from it.
Sure. You know,
it was something I wanted to celebrate, you know, part of my life, you know, it's the sentimental, outlook wanting to sing Christmas songs.
Are you a sentimental person?
That, pardon?
Are you a sentimental person?
Well, I think sentiment is something we all participate in, and it's certainly part of my life. I think music in itself carries a certain freightage of sentiment. So, yeah, I feel sentiment. And I think Christmas music itself is sentimental. And I think, and that you're cold-blooded, there must be some sentiment in your life. So, yeah, I'm a romantic person. I have a romantic outlook. And there's a shadowy romanticism is always orbiting everything I do.
Roll over. Cut it. I ain't talking just to tease. People like you, they don't grow on trees. Looky here, that's what it's gonna be. Have everything I need around my soulful Christmas tree. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. I love you, have good cheer. I love you, come on baby, my precious love.
The Christmas songs were a huge challenge as a singer and for the band to do justice to those, because they're seemingly simple songs you can do like falling off a log, but far from it. They're beautifully arranged and practically orchestral. Even the Gene Autry song, Rudolph, the way he sings Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which is what I studied. I always loved the way Gene Autry sang that song. He had a marvelous voice. And so I wanted to embody these songs. And, you know, Santa Claus is back in town. Hey, listen to the way Elvis did that. I mean, hey, it's had a dance to it. It's got in your body. It's a very sensual song.
Christmas, Christmas, Christmas. On my back, you're gonna see me coming in a big black Cadillac. Well, it's Christmas time, pretty baby.
When I heard the album, it seemed like it was inevitable you would do one, because one of sort of your, you know, sort of ongoing points of conversation has been the things that we've lost, and in some ways, the things that we shared that were lost, and you know. Pre-British invasion, the Christmas album was a part of everybody's career. Sooner or later, if you made popular music, you made a Christmas album. And it really was.
Yeah, I guess so.
And while the British invasion and the Beatles and Rolling Stones brought a lot of positive things with them, one of the things that was lost in the way that changed our ideas about the musician and about the popular artist, one of the things that was lost was the Christmas record.
That's true, Alex. That's true. Now, also, as we're speaking of the British invasion, let's not forget how they mined the earlier forms, how they mined country blues and jump blues and 50s and 60s rock and roll. That was there. That was the foundation of all they did. And then into their experimental work with Cream and later, it was all predicated on the earlier forms. They went back to those. They went back to Howlin' Wolf, you know?
Sure.
And so did I. I met Howlin' Wolf in Memphis. I went to a picture made with Howlin' Wolf at the Showcase Lounge at the W.C. Handy Theater on Orange Mound. And that was before I started Panther Burns, but it's a life-changing event. And it's same with these British cats. We're all into that which had gone down before them, because it was a huge revival, too. The blues revival going on at that time. And, you know, all the early Beatles, Rolling Stones music. Really a very fertile period for those two groups. Was totally drawn from soul and blues and, you know, the great American contribution.
Sure.
This is our contribution to the world.
Sure. You know.
You know, and even, you know, Irving Berlin and all these, you know, New York Tin Pan Alley artists, they all were drawing from that too.
Right.
So.
You know, I was thinking, so many of the songs that you recorded over the years have been songs that were not well known, but that were exactly that, were songs from this you know, from this body of work that had been largely overlooked. And you know, and in the last, you know, last 10 to 15 years, people have done the work to unearth and uncover a lot of sort of great obscure, you know, rockabilly and blues and you know, and lesser known Christmas songs by black artists and in sort of, and that were sort of in Panther Burns wheelhouse. And so I wonder why you went for sort of best known songs instead of towards sort of, you know, unearthing Christmas songs or drawing attention to lesser known songs, you know, in some ways the way Panther Burns has in the past.
Yes, well, I did pull out a couple tunes that are not so well known, maybe not known at all, really, too much. For instance, A Soulful Christmas, James Brown did. And as I said, he did so many Christmas songs. It's not surprising that one particular song maybe isn't heard too often. Certainly not in the repertoire of Christmas music we listen to, black or white. The other songs I wanted to do from my from when Christmas meant most to me, and of course, Christmas in America, and in large part of the world is for children and young people who still believe in Santa Claus and in Christmas.
Right.
And I think they're the ones for whom Christmas lives most in their hearts, even though the grown-ups around them, you know, are joyful because their children and their loved ones are consumed and infused with the Christmas spirit. So at any rate, I chose the songs that were the classics to record and that meant most to me and that I still like to hear at Christmas time because of all the residual memory that goes with those songs throughout your life.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red and a green Christmas tree. Be the same, dear, if you're not here with me. And when those blues.
So these are the songs that I felt I wanted to sing.
Sure.
And that's why I did them. I I wasn't trying to direct attention in this case to obscure artists, to expose them. It's been part of the mission of my work. But not with the Christmas record. It was something I chose for musical content, and that meant most to me in my life as someone celebrating Christmas like anybody else.
Could you have recorded this album back around the time of Magnolia Curtain?
Certainly not.
Why not?
I was not, because I was not equipped as an artist to, as a singer, to do those songs. In fact, I'm not sure I would have been able to approach those songs, those Christmas songs, up until 3 or 4 years ago. Because I'm evolving as a singer. I got a late start in life, you know?
Right.
And it didn't happen overnight to be able to sing, period. And so it's been, you know, I didn't grow up in the church singing. We didn't have music in my family. I've always been drawn to music, but I only know the intervals. I don't know music in a formal way. I know it by ear, and I know certain intervals. Sinatra didn't know music. He knew the intervals like a jazz man. But I was not equipped as a singer to even do most of the songs on the Cabaret of Daggers album until I walked in the studio in Rome. And even though I had not ever even attempted Strange Fruit or Born to Be Blue, the Mel Torme, Chet Baker jazz classic, I knew I could do them, though, when I walked through the studio door. I knew it was time. I knew I could do those songs. A year before, I couldn't do it. I wasn't ready.
I'll tell you one of the reasons.
I got on top of it. Yeah.
One of the reasons.
And I don't know why.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you, I hadn't thought about just literally the physical ability and the ability as a, you know, as a singer to take on the song. But I also wonder if, you know, I think about, you know, when, you know, I got to think, like, I know when that record came out, my interest in Christmas music was really minimal. And kind of to some degree, because I feel like, you know, when you're in the middle of a classic of that rock and roll moment, Christmas music is like kids' music or your mom's music. And certainly that's the way it was for me at the time. And it wasn't until, you know, to a great degree, music, rock and roll music, was the music that defined who was on my side. And it drew the line between the cool kids and the uncool kids. And it wasn't until, you know, I got a little older and got out of that dichotomy that I was able to enjoy Christmas music a lot more. And I wonder if, not just as a performer, but just even as a, you know, as a person conceptualizing his music, would you at that time have thought Christmas music was a good idea?
At which time?
At the time of Magnolia Curtain.
Well, I enjoyed Christmas music when Christmas came around at that point in my life, but it would have been far from my thoughts to even consider recording a Christmas record, to do a Christmas song other than Blue Christmas, which I had performed a number of times. Even by the 1980s, I was singing that on stage.
Ah.
But only that.
Right.
Only that song. And never really gave much thought to recording it ever. But it was something I liked to do on stage around Christmas time. just like Elvis wanted to do it, obviously, or somebody suggested he do it. But Elvis loved all that music anyway, and he was a hillbilly cat that was also part of the rock and roll rebellion in the beginning. But also from the beginning, Elvis sang so-called spiritual music. He sang hymns. So did Jerry Lee. Jerry Lee sang Over the Rainbow for years and years. And these were rock and roll rebels.
Thanks to Tav Falco for the time and the talk. And thanks to AF the Naysayer for our theme music. You can comment on the show at 12 Songs of Christmas on Facebook. Let me know what you think. We'll go out with one more song from a Tav Falco Christmas. This is his version of Holly Jolly Christmas, the song Burl Ives sang on the 1964 animated Christmas special Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.
You can see somebody waits for you. Kiss her once for me. Have a holly.